Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for staying with us this morning, for hanging around. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, is our guest, as she is every week at this time, as we talk about some of the brilliant things that Kiplinger has to say, including Joan. She's definitely contributes a lot to the letter. Joan, welcome back.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
On this momentous day.
Boy, it sure is.
Yeah. I want to get into the letter, but before we do that, by the way, Joan, I'm going to be in Washington next week.
Oh, really?
The end of next
Ooh,
week.
Ooh, that sounds
and,
exciting.
Yeah, I know you're
I'll
all
be out of town.
I know you're all on Twitter about that, but I would like to ask you to arrange for the cherry blossoms to be out.
Well, let me start working on that now.
Would you make a note of that?
They actually will probably be very beautiful because they'll be behind. But normally by the end of March, they're usually petering out. So you might be coming at just the right time.
Yeah, I hope so. So anyway, just sort of arrange for that. Stop the rain so that they don't doesn't wash them all off and everything.
Well, you don't ask much.
No, not much. But I know you can handle it. I mean, I know you're tuned into the powers that be there. Joan, let's talk about let's get into the letter and then we'll save the current events, the more current events for a little bit later on, but I will say that on the front page here, you guys talk about the fact that we've been basically girding for war. We've been girding our loins, so to speak, as the Bible would say, for a battle with Iraq, and it looks like that started.
That's right. Our lead this week is really about domestic security, and I think it comes at a good time because not only are we looking at war, but we're looking at the heightened possibility of terrorist attacks on U.S. soil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the things that was also part and parcel to the announcement that Mr. Bush had given Mr. Hussein 48 hours to get out of town, and so, you know, and the idea they raised the level of the alert to high,
right,
and basically,
which I thought was the high when I heard high, I thought that meant red,
right.
But as it turns out, orange is high.
Yeah.
Red is severe.
Yeah, there actually is a higher level than high.
That's right.
Like being happier than just happy. So, and you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, we're whistling past the graveyard here a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, we're not making fun, folks. It's just trying to have a little bit of levity here. But the thing is, it's true. And you're right there in D.C. And a lot of people consider your city and New York and other big cities to be targets for that.
Oh, no question about it. And there's already heightened police presence all around the city today.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's going to impact travel into the area? You know, I am coming next week, so that's the other thing. I'd like for you to make sure that it's safe when I get there.
I'm going to work on that. Well, I think you'll probably see heightened security at the airports, and you're going to see probably a decrease in business travel, at least temporarily. So you might have a very nice, empty, quiet flight.
Yeah, who knows? And maybe no standing room at the restaurants, huh? But anyway, well, the thing that you guys also point out is that Homeland Security comes with a price. And you know, Joan, if you remember, a year and a half ago, you and I talked about this, and I actually wrote an article about the deferred maintenance of peace that we have deferred, the maintenance of our own security that we've deferred, and it's very expensive, isn't it, to create Homeland Security. But one of the reasons I think it's expensive is because we've gone so long without doing anything about it.
Well, and that's why September 11th was such a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. When we get into some of these areas that we're going to talk about, you're going to, at least some of them, I started looking at saying, why didn't we do this a long time ago? Well, as you know, hindsight is always 20/20. And I think in the wake of September 11th, in a lot of cases, we really had to scramble to catch up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, there are winners and losers, and that's one of the things you guys pointed out in this. There are winners and losers in the Homeland Security thing. Some people who are only on the purchasing end of Homeland Security, especially corporations who are having to beef up their security, including airlines who are having really taken a hit on this. For companies like that who are on the purchasing end, that makes them losers. But there are companies out there who are on the winning end because they actually sell products, don't they?
That's right. Well,
home
sure.
Security
so,
products.
And we're not trying to say someone's going to profit from war, but it is a fact of life that someone is making and selling these products that are needed.
You guys point out that the energy industries, the chemical and the transports, and the healthcare industries are really going to take a hit on because of Homeland Security.
Well, and they're the ones on the front lines that have to be up to speed to make sure their security is top-notch.
You know, another one that I don't see on your list here, maybe it's here and I missed it, is the local authorities, the local police forces that are going to have to beef up for all that. Because as you know, as you said, they're on the front lines too. They really are at the front lines of terrorism, aren't they?
Yeah, and we can see that right here in Washington, D.C. The local police force is right standing shoulder to shoulder with the National Guard in protecting us.
Well, and don't forget, I know a number of communities and I can't imagine how many police forces out there would not be impacted by some of their members being taken off as reservists and National Guard and are now on active duty. I mean, I know some small towns that as many as a third of their people are actually now on active duty, small
that's
police
right.
forces. So that's an extra hit for them. So not only are they overworked, but they're also understaffed. So there's a lot of stress and strain out there, isn't it? In fact, that's one of the words you guys used.
Oh, no question about it. And, of course, we're also talking about private businesses having to step up and get involved in this, too.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you throw in the weak economy, and that really makes some corners that we could cut look pretty attractive, too, doesn't it?
Well, right. You know, the timing isn't good for having to step up to spend all this money, but it really does have to be done.
$40 billion a year? Is that what you guys are saying?
That's what we're saying.
That's what the government's tab is for public security, $40 billion a year.
It's huge, I know. And we're saying that doubles what we spent before September 11th.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Joan, and I don't know if anybody's ever done this, and hopefully somebody's working on this, and if you find out about this, please let us know. But I wonder if anybody is working on an estimate of what the cost was, the true cost, or at least as close as somebody can get, of 911.
Yeah, I've actually gotten that question from subscribers, and I know, and I don't remember it, I know there's a figure for insurance losses, but that's nowhere near the total cost. That's just sort of a beginning.
I'm not sure it could actually be calculated.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that. Well, because you have to decide what your parameters were in determining what a cost was.
Well, you'd have to go back, and there's so much that's indirect expenses.
Right.
Which is loss of productivity, loss of business, that kind of thing, loss of potential business. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We got more to come with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors 20 After. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. Joe Cocker rocking behind me there. The Wild Man, Joan. Joan Pride, senior editor with our Kiplinger Letters. You're speechless, aren't you, Joan?
Yeah, as usual. That music comes on.
I like Joe Cocker. He's a crazy man. Hey, Joan, another thing that's happening out there that's kind of tough is how all this Homeland Security expense is hitting the states. This is like triple jeopardy.
The absolute worst possible time.
I mean,
their budgets are getting hurt, and the president's proposing all these tax cuts that are going to hurt them more, and now they have to step up. And Homeland Security isn't something that you can really be deferring right now.
Joan, their budgets aren't getting hurt. Their budgets are killed.
Yeah, getting devastated.
They're already killed. I mean,
and you know what that
smashed.
Also means? It trickles down to local governments as well.
And, you know, it also trickles down to education.
Right.
Trickles down to so many things. I mean, we've got a can of worms here in a lot of ways that we just have to. But do you know the beautiful thing about all this, Joan? In a way, it can be beautiful. Americans we're tough birds, and we have the ability to really bear down and work our way out of these things. I mean, we've done it in the past, and that's one of the things I think that makes this country stronger. is that we know, we've been around long enough now that we know that we've been through some tough things and we pulled out of it. And even though this is tough, this isn't as tough as we've had.
Oh, that's true.
And we've got a lot more. We've got a lot more resources to deal with it than we ever had before. But what do you think about, what do you think is going to be, let's say that, let's just project that, that in 2 weeks, things have settled down and basically we've got control of Iraq. The coalition of the willing, 30 to 45 nations have control of Iraq, and we're starting to give that big country back to Iraqis. And there has
been, in other words,
been,
the best case scenario.
Exact best case scenario. That's
okay.
Right. Thank you for that. And,
sure.
And we're not. We haven't been attacked by anybody, by any terrorists. And it seems like maybe we're, you know, we're still kind of winning that battle a little bit. Don't you think that we'll really start turning things around in this country as far as the economy is concerned?
Well, that's the hope. But I guess what we have been saying the last few weeks is that don't assume everything is suddenly going to be rosy because the war is over. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to probably unleash some pent-up business investment, which would be good.
Well, the stock market is giving us that indication right now, isn't it?
Yes.
At least, I don't
absolutely
know about this moment, but I mean about last couple of days, it's been giving us some good indications, hasn't it?
That's right. That's a good point.
The attitude's been good over there.
Yes.
But let's move over and talk about some specific things. On page two, you guys talk about some specific things that we're going to be able to have. And then some of these things have been around for a while, but we just haven't been using them in terms of detecting terrorists and keeping ourselves safe. And that's biometric IDs.
Yeah, this is interesting. I've always thought, especially with the facial and eye patterns, you know, this is akin to fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that your iris in your eye
and your retina
and your retina is unique to you. So
yes.
There are gadgets out there that can identify you by, I guess, just looking at your eye.
I don't know about iris scanners, but retinal scanners have been around for probably 20 years.
Yes.
But we just never used them. I mean, there's been a lot of technology out there. There was just never any other than just to gain access. Some companies used it to gain access. In fact, you know one of the places where retinal scanners were used 20 years ago?
Where?
Saudi Arabia.
Really?
They would use them to get into secure properties out there that are out in the middle of the, you know, out in the middle of the desert or something.
Yeah.
And they would use them out there just to keep them having to have keys.
Wow.
You know, carry a key around. They would use those retinal scanners.
Right.
But you know, they're a little cumbersome. You got to bend over and put your eye on a little socket, you know, so to speak, a little opening,
right,
and let the thing shoot your retina or your iris or whatever. And they're not inexpensive. And so, but I think this is going to be something that if they can make this, if they can make this where it's a little easier to get people in and out, I think we're probably going to see more of these.
Very interesting.
Yeah. You guys also say that, I think this is interesting, that the use of biometrics online will allow consumers to make e-purchases without the fear of ID theft. Now, what's that all about?
Well, as you know, one of the problems that people always worry about is an insecure connection and getting their credit card stolen.
Right.
But if you have, and of course you can't, the other problem is how do you identify a person and make sure that they're the ones using the credit card online? It would seem almost impossible, but I think with the new technology and you employing these eye scans, that's going to work now.
But I think I'm a reasonable visionary when it comes to imagining how technology could work, but I'm having a little trouble understanding how the biometrics are going to work online.
Well, I don't see why they couldn't, because the scanner is connected in some way to the Internet.
Yeah.
It can transmit that information.
I guess so.
But, I mean, you're talking to someone who's very computer illiterate, so I'm just wild speculation on my part.
This is an interesting one, though. I really had not actually heard of this before Kiplinger.
Well, that's
reported
why you read the Kiplinger
exactly
letter.
Exactly. Yeah, you heard it here first, folks. But this is interesting, an interesting development. But I am going to predict this, though, Joan.
Oh boy!
I'm going to predict that this will happen. What we were just talking about will become a fact of life. But I'm going to predict it's going to be a while. It's not going to happen. I bet we won't see it any sooner than 5 years.
Okay, I'm writing this one down again.
Write that down. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Joan Pride is our guest. She's with the Kiplinger Editor. She'll be with us on the other side of these messages. Did I say it's 29 after? Well, if I didn't, it is. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. God bless America.
now celebrating 5 years of burning up the airwaves.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You're listening to the voice of small business.
This is Dr. Fraser Crane. I'm listening.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for being part of our day, for hanging around with us this morning. Me and our good friend and our guest this hour, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, give us the website there, Kiplinger.
Yes, it's www.kiplinger.com.
And you guys have got some publications there.
A few that
have been around a while. The Kiplinger Letter, which is the weekly letter. It's been around for in its 80th year now. Joan joined right after they started. And
excuse me?
And then
you
they have
just waiting to see if I was paying attention.
Then they have the three biweekly letters, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, and the Agriculture Letter that you can also order from and subscribe on, with a 30-day free trial option right now, too, by the way, from Kiplinger.com and a magazine. Joan, what is that magazine's name?
Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Personal. It's just for you folks.
Yeah.
And also, you can also get it at newsstands and bookstores. And also, there's a phone number. Joan, why don't you give us that?
Yes. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
0155. Check it out when you get a chance. Don't forget to ask them for the Jim Blassingame 30-day free trial. Joan, our consumers have been kind of MIA for the last few months.
You can't blame them. They had to take a little breather.
No kidding. I mean, their plastic was wearing out, wasn't it?
They had to stop and get some new cards.
I heard two or three of your credit cards disintegrated in the machine the other day.
Yeah, but I had new ones to back them up.
I already
planned on that. Yes, I wouldn't stop spending.
Yeah, there's no danger of that.
I'm very patriotic.
Well, but you guys are predicting that they're going to come back.
Well, that's what we say in late spring.
In the spring.
I think you're going to see right now a little bit of a decline in consumer spending right now around the start of the war.
Yeah.
People are going to stay home, sit by the fire, not go out, not travel, not do those things. But, you know, assuming a quick end of the war, you know, and as the weather gets nicer in many parts of the country and spring starts, I think you will see a spending rebound from consumers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, another thing that I think will help consumers, Joan, don't you think that petroleum prices are going to fall significantly when this war's settled?
Well, that's what we're hoping for, exactly.
They've already fallen, really, in the last few days, haven't they?
Right.
They're down, from about 36 or 7 to around 30 now, 29 or 30?
I think so, yeah.
Come down about 20%, actually,
right.
I guess, and within the last week, I think. And so it wouldn't take much to a little bit of stability over there in the Middle East would send them down a good bit, I think. And especially when the Iraqi oil can start flowing and the Iraqi people can start benefiting from their resources over
there. Exactly.
So hopefully that will happen. Now, here's an interesting one. Property tax bills will climb quickly in the coming year. Now, is this because of reassessments?
Exactly. The rates, we're saying rates are being pushed higher, but I think in a lot of cases, jurisdictions are trying to hold rates steady because they know assessments are going up.
Yeah. Well, and also, Joan, you can't have the kind of strong housing market that we've had now for how many years without these property values going up.
Right. Oh, no question.
And so that alone is going to raise property taxes. I mean,
yes.
When they do the reassessments, the rates are going to go up. So are you saying that not only are the assessments going up, but the actual rates are going to go up?
Well, that's what we're saying. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, they're just getting as much money as they can to cover budget shortfalls.
Mm-hmm. Of course, many times those rates are based on what the populace wants, what the consumers want, because they actually do have, you know, elections. They actually have to vote on some of these
oftentimes.
Right. So, and the ones that I've seen where I thought they would actually pass, they actually were voted down to raise those. What about consumer debt? Now, you guys asked the question, is it a time bomb? What do we know about that?
Right. And we're saying, and we have it. Now, see, if your listeners had the letter in front of them, they could see this nifty little graph that shows consumer debt is high and it's trending upward, but really what trended upward in the late 90s was mortgage debt more than consumer debts, which is making total debt, you know, the income-to-debt ratio pretty high.
But see, I think that's a little bit misleading. And I don't mean your graph is misleading, but I think, I know you guys are just reporting what you find, but mortgage debt is consumer debt to a large degree, because how much of that mortgage debt is a second mortgage, an equity loan taken out to consolidate credit card loans?
Well, then that's a vicious cycle.
Think about that. So I think that maybe that's a little bit misleading when they report that. When the people who are reporting this use that example.
Yeah.
Stand by. 20 till. Right back after these messages. We're back. 17 till. Let me remind you, Kelly Oldwiler is going to be with us in the next show, and she's one of the ladies. She is our premier intuition expert, especially with regard to the making sure that we keep our eyes open to our paradoxes. And she helps us to understand that our paradoxes are actually can be used to our advantage, especially if we know that we have them and that we can use them. And then after that, we're going to be visiting with a high-tech small business entrepreneur, a guy named Stephen Fort. And he's a guy I'm going to meet next week when I come to Washington to work with the Association for Competitive Technology for their member fly-in up there. That's going to be in a little over a week that I'll be doing that. And then Pat Moorhead is with Advanced Micro Devices. He's in charge of their communications division. And he and I are going to talk about something that I've been working with them on. That's called the technology gap, the gap between the way technology companies create their products and the gap between them providing those products and consumers actually buying them. So we're going to talk about that when Pat joins us. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. My website, by the way, folks, is www.jbsba.com. Joan, this is an area that I know is in your wheelhouse, and that's this pension issue, the 401k fraud that's going on right now. And you say we're going to get some help from the government.
A little bit of help. Well, what's happening now is in many cases you have plan sponsors or other fiduciaries who need to go after, say, unscrupulous record keepers or other people, need to file lawsuits against them to try to recoup some money for the participants. But the funny thing about pension law, the law known as ERISA, is that it doesn't allow out-of-court settlements because I guess they're concerned about, insider dealing or something like that. But in a lot of cases, a settlement is much preferred to a lengthy court trial.
Right. So, and this is against people who basically are fiduciaries, people that we count on for our record keeping and to help us manage our accounts. And this is the ability to go after those people.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, and so maybe the government's going to help us with that. And does that mean we're going to be able to sue them now?
Well, it'll mean that you will. You could have always sued them. It's just that you couldn't reach an out-of-court settlement with them.
So
reaching the out-of-court, being able to reach the out-of-court settlement may make you more willing to want to bring the action and push for some kind of resolution.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move over to page 3, and I mentioned fuel prices a little bit earlier, Joan, that I think a lot of people, of course, as we said, the prices are already coming down, and, you know, it hasn't been that long ago, maybe only about 4 years ago, Joan, that fuel was, that the petroleum, raw petroleum was crude oil, I should say, was only about $9 or $10 a barrel. I remember reporting on that.
Gee.
I remember reporting on that, Joan. It was a problem for U.S. producers. There are a group of producers in the United States that have these low production wells. Maybe they only produce, you know, maybe like 8 or 10 barrels a day. I mean,
wow.
Just a little bitty low production. They're unmanned. You know, just got a pump out there, and they just the oil was so low that they were capping some of those wells and closing them up because the maintenance on the pumps wasn't. I mean, the amount of production at $8 or $10 a barrel wasn't enough to pay for the maintenance.
Yeah, I can see that.
And so, what the point that they were making was that it was actually a national security issue because we need those wells to be pumping.
Sure do.
And so my point is there were some people actually complaining about the low price of oil. We've had the opposite of that in the last few months, haven't we?
It wasn't that long ago where we had $1 a gallon gasoline.
Mm-hmm. And now we've had in some places over $2 a gallon.
Right.
Is anybody looking into whether we're being some of this is gouging?
You know, it's funny. Usually, when these spikes occur, there is talk of gouging. I haven't heard that this time, but one has to wonder whether that's what's happening.
I always wonder that.
Yeah, but you're just a suspicious type.
I'm a cynical guy. Yeah, yeah, that's right. But it's going to be interesting to see, and hopefully, and this would be another. Wouldn't this be another nice little shot in the arm for the economy if rates could come, if petroleum could come down to say maybe $18 or $20 a barrel?
Boy, that would be a big help. Sure,
that would really kind of change some attitudes a little bit, wouldn't it?
Yep.
What
yep.
about some of the things that moving on down to the jobs and hiring section, Joan? You say the Labor Department is stepping up enforcement activities for people who break the teenage working rules.
Right. If we're talking about situations where teenage workers are placed at risk of serious injury, if those kinds of violations are found, you'll get slapped with a penalty of $50,000, and that's up from 11.
What kind of a job would that be? Do you have any examples?
Well, I would think that, you know, you've got a lot of teenagers. I guess you could tend to think of teenagers working behind a counter at McDonald's, but I would think that they could be doing more strenuous activities such as construction, that kind of thing, or working in a factory warehouse.
A factory or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. But the thing is it would seem to me that somebody would need to define that. Because, you know, when I was a teenager, I would take whatever job I could get.
To try to
get off the farm.
Right.
I was taking anything. So, you know, you can't blame the person for asking for the job. And if somebody thinks they can get a good worker for, you know, in this young person, but maybe we don't know that we're doing something wrong. So it seemed to me that they need to define that and get that information out.
Yeah.
So, okay, Joan, we're going to take a quick break, folks, in just a few seconds. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of more important things that Kiplinger has to say on page 4. And we're going to talk about a little bit about what's going on over there in Iraq. Right after these messages, Tim Till, stay with us. Back, it's 7 till. Joan Pride is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm your host. Joan's with the Kiplinger Editors, and I'm with the Small Business Network. Joan, one of the things you guys report on page 4 is that Congress is going to disappoint people like me, small business owners, on health insurance. What's up with that?
Well, the problem here is that you're talking about the prescription drug situation.
Well, the regulation, the exempting the state regulations on health insurance plans, on down a little bit lower than that, I think is what you're looking at there. They're not going to allow the exemption of state regulations for insurance plans to be offered through national free groups.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Yeah, that's a big deal for small business owners to be able to align themselves with national trade groups.
Right, you really need the economies of scale there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely, and that's one of the best ways. I mean, if Congress wants to get millions of people off this list, the statistic of people who don't have health insurance, they need to pass this.
Right.
Because that would do so much for that. It would do so much to help small business owners. Micropreneurs could align themselves with chambers of commerce or with trade groups that serve their industry. And I don't understand why they won't do this. It makes no sense to me.
Well, you got me. I think it's a no-brainer.
But it is, but yet they'll resist this, and then somebody will turn around and say, "Do you know how many uninsured Americans we have? We've got to do something about this." And see what irritates me is most Americans won't connect those two dots. You see what I mean?
Well, yeah.
They won't take that politician who said that to task by saying, "Well, you know what, dummy? If you just passed if you just passed this that bill that was in front of you, we could have taken about three 20 million people off that roll.
Right.
Let's move on down and talk about trade.
Yes.
China is emerging.
China.
You know, I've been calling it.
I've been
saying it for a long time. It's an economic tsunami. Tsunami, I should say, that's gonna wash over. And I'll tell you, Japan is in the muzzle of China.
Oh.
And you know who's frightened of China right now? This is really interesting. You know, I was there over the weekend in D.C. working with the South African Customs Union and our U.S. Trade Representative, Ambassador Zeller. And do you know that the South Africans, are worried about China?
The South Africans?
Yes, because, you know, see, one of the things that South Africa makes is a type of fabric. It's an indigenous native type of fabric that women like to wear, you know, as a shawl and that kind of thing, and that the South Africans have been known for. And when I say South Africans, I don't mean the nation, just the nation of South Africa. It could be Zimbabwe or Namibia or Swaziland or whatever, but those countries are known for that product. Guess who's making that product now and selling it in Europe?
China?
Yes.
Wow.
They're knocking it off. Poor little old Swaziland. Hey. Poor little Swaziland, about the size of Manhattan, you know. And the Chinese are knocking it off. They're worried about them. And so African women, African origin women, are walking around Europe thinking they're being so, you know, true to their origins, wearing Chinese,
whatever the
name of that product is.
Yeah.
So China, folks, look out for China, folks. It's emerging. No question about it in the marketplace, the global marketplace. Joan, let's talk about Iraq. We've got about a minute and a half.
Sure.
Obviously, the war started. I'm going to still predict that Mr. Bush has made it clear. You know what, Saddam, when I say 48 hours, I mean 48 hours.
Not 49.
Yeah. So I think he got they had a little wake-up call over there last night. And as you know, at noon Eastern time, it'll just be getting dark in Iraq.
Yeah, that's one thing will really start rolling.
I think there's a good chance, don't you? Of course, it doesn't mean that it will. Somebody says, you know, it doesn't hurt to just ice them a little bit over there and let them look up at the sky. But I think something will happen tonight, and it'll be interesting. And I know that you're like me. We just pray that it's quick and as
few casualties as possible. That's all I hope for. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The Iraqi parliament is defiant. They're standing behind their guy over there. I wonder how much of that's under duress, though.
Well, yeah, I think they kind of have to, given how he would treat them if they did not stand behind him.
But doesn't that start to crumble the closer that the Abrams tanks get to Baghdad?
I would think so at some point.
As more of those, you know, I wonder if the U.S. won't just lob maybe quite a few more missiles in over there tonight. And then back off for a day and just see what happens. You know, let the thing kind of crumble, you know, sort of implode on its own.
Well, I don't think they're going to wait too long, though.
Yeah. Joan, thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Good for you. Good day. Good job
thank
today.
Thank you.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. She'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every member of our military standing a post over there in the Middle East and around the world doing what they have to do for freedom. God bless you. And God bless America. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.